mics are on. Sorry, this one won't work either. So it'll be fine.
Good jinx.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the REScreening.com podcast. I'm your host, REScreening.com's Owen Mark Eastman, and with me, as always, is co-host extraordinaire Shane Leonard.
Hello, I'm so excited. I'm about to jump in line right over here. I'm like, hello! approaching the mic.
You don't even need to be introduced.
No,
just, right. I'm on. Start talking. All right, so this week, we're actually officially sort of going to cover Live by Night. But we've got so many things to catch up on and so many things to go through. And because of some technical difficulties in our last show, we really need to do Rogue One and Manchester by the Sea again, because that show got butchered somehow.
Did you get emails?
As far as the upload, no.
You didn't hear, you heard it from me.
It's, you know, it's
like that was so,
it's the wrong time of year to get emails
and
stuff.
I think people
just go whatever.
Right.
they just don't even.
This is our tease episode.
The live show, you'd have been okay. Whoever was listening live apparently was okay,
right.
But something went wrong with Blog Talk Radio uploading it, and I don't know what it is. It got cut off. I listened to some of it, and I kind of I've turned up the volume now, sort of
a little bit. Yeah.
Not to get too technical with you, but just in case maybe it wasn't picking up enough.
Right. And we lost audio. Lost audio about five or six in. It started cutting in and out, so it made me feel like it was a Blog Talk. I mean, look at us passing the
yeah,
box.
Yeah, so I don't know.
But it was having difficulty.
Whatever it is, it's not our fault. That's for sure.
I just forgot to tell you this. This will be real quick because we only have 500 things to do.
Right.
I didn't realize until I went to go listen to the show to figure out what was going on with it, if I could figure out. And I figured out we missed something two episodes ago. This is our 203rd show.
Oh,
so
look at that.
Three episodes ago, we hit 200, and the hell, what do we know?
Yeah,
we didn't pay any attention.
No one cares.
That's kind of cool.
It is cool.
It's kind of neat.
That is pretty cool.
We're at 203.
We don't have time to talk about it now.
Right, 202 and a half if we count last week's, but we technically have done 200.
So congratulations to us.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I meant to say that.
And so now everyone's lost already, but we also need to cover Passengers.
Yeah.
Assassin's Creed.
Yep.
Luckily, I've written a couple things down. And then 10 or 15 other movies that we'll never get to. Who knows? If we can really zip through a lot of things. And we've got to get through stuff so that eventually we can get to our best list and our worst list and all sorts of other shows. And the Golden Globes just happened.
Yeah.
So we probably have to talk about that. I was actually not surprised. There was only one thing that surprised me, and that was Aaron Taylor-Johnson. That was
very surprising.
That was kind of out of nowhere.
Super, super surprised. You see the look of
yeah,
the
yeah.
Like, what? That, like, come on.
That was kind of surprising, especially, it was a very weird thing, actually, because Mahershala Ali has been taking everything with Moonlight.
Yep.
He got the Critics' Choice.
Yep.
And massive front runner for that award.
Yeah, and he's really good.
And he is actually very good in it anyway.
Sure. It's not like it's a pity
but
or
it's
a sympathy vote. He's getting it. But
yeah, it's not like it's not like Tom Hanks is in something and so everyone's voting for him. I mean, it's like he's actually really good. Critics have been going crazy for him. He's been picking up all kinds of awards for it.
Yeah.
And then boom, Aaron Taylor-Johnson. Other than that, there was nothing to surprise me because, as probably everybody knows already, La La Land broke the Golden Globe record.
It was awesome.
Not only did it win more awards than any other movie by picking up seven.
Seven, yeah.
But it also won everything it was nominated for.
Oh, yeah, right.
It was batting a thousand on that one. So I think that, for any movie that's been nominated for maybe more than like four things or something, I think that's probably a record too, because you don't get everything.
No.
You're always nominated for like screenplay or score
big,
or song
yeah.
or something like that, where you don't get every single thing
that's quite a
you're after. So
coming up too.
It is. And it's, everything that happened is very in line with the Critics' Choice too.
Yeah, so far,
pretty much everything that happened, except on the TV side, where the Golden Globes gave a lot of stuff to The Night Manager, mm-hmm. which, quite frankly, I'm in favor of.
Yeah.
Wow. I think that it deserved a lot of things, especially like Hugh Laurie got supporting actor, and I was really bummed about him not getting that one with the Critics' Choice, because he's awesome.
He's great.
It.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's a really good thing anyway.
Yeah.
And so La La Land got everything. Moonlight got on the drama side.
Yep.
And, you know, so
it did well.
La La Land, just, obviously,
that's a juggernaut,
is on the comedy side.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, because, you know, it's funny.
Right.
And and that's how the Golden Globes work. Anyway. and I think another a really good thing, Casey Affleck is, you know, we have to mention that he's, you know, continuing to steamroll everything.
Yeah.
He got the Critics' Choice too. And then in another move that I'm really happy about, that we, you know, predicted kind of, Isabel Huppert got actress for Elle.
Yeah.
Which I just think is so awesome, because obviously the movie also picked up the best foreign film at the Golden Globes. But I just think it's awesome when a foreign movie actually gets recognized in, you know, the regular things,
right?
The regular categories. Like,
right.
Like a foreign film can't actually be good enough to have like the best actor or actress or something like that. So I think that's awesome that it picked that up. And she's actually really good, and it's a really weird movie. I think it's one of those movies that, it, even though it's a foreign film, it's just such a screwy thing that people had to take more notice of.
Right.
It's like such a goofy, you know, she kind of goes after her rapist, basically.
Right.
I mean, and it's really cool. It reminds me in a really weird way of Hard Candy.
Right. I was just, and it's weird to think of that and then realize how old that movie is.
I know, it's so old. If only that movie had gotten more attention, because it's so cool.
Right.
But anyway,
that was back when video stores were still around.
Yeah.
I'm saying 2003, 2004, something like that.
Right.
Like 93. I don't think Ellen Page was alive in 93.
She's young enough in the movie as it is. You don't have to go any farther back.
Creepy.
All right. Anyway, so we've got to jump into movies, because we have to get through them as fast as we can and really kick.
We're not going to get through all these.
Kick things out. No, but we're going to try to get to Live by Night, Manchester, Rogue One, Passengers, and Assassin's Creed at least.
Just
because we have to. We have to catch up.
We got
to
clear up a bit.
Some of those that are from a while ago, we're going to have to go
these
really
are
fast.
Easy. We can breeze through a couple. Rogue One, Manchester by the Sea.
And it's interesting that the one that we really have to make sure that we cover is the one that nobody wants to pay any attention to. It's so weird. Didn't really get nominated for like anything.
Yeah.
Has no shot at anything. And, you know, 5 or 6 months ago, you kind of thought it would.
Right.
Because it's Ben Affleck and it's a big gangstery movie and it's coming out at the right time. And obviously people thought, you know, from the studio and thought that maybe it would have a chance or something, but no such luck.
No.
And for me, the story of it, even though the story is long and complicated, and we won't go, I won't just start reviewing it yet, but it's a little bit too familiar almost.
Yeah.
For people who are going to nominate stuff for awards to go, oh yes, I have to see that. It's, you know, you can't, even if it's a gangster movie, it's got to be sufficiently different, and you can see it trying to be different.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you go, but not exactly, whether it's good or bad. That doesn't, that doesn't mean
thing
that doesn't
film.
Mean it's bad. And before we jump into that, one more thing really quick, I'm going to say tonight, Tuesday, if you're not listening to us live, you missed it. Taboo is coming on
Taboo
FX
Tuesday.
And it's Tom Hardy. Yes, it's really good.
See, I can't wait.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this.
It is really good. And
the only
problem with it, and I don't want to turn anybody off, the only problem with it is that the first episode, while it's still really good,
yeah,
man, it is like establishing stuff, and it's a little bit slow. But yeah. it's by the guy who made Peaky Blinders. So yeah. I mean, if you like that show,
right, you're already in,
which everyone does. Yeah, you have to watch the show for about 25 seconds to realize that it's by the guy who made Peaky yeah. Blinders. It looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of period stuff where you almost think that they like took over some living history museum. It's like got all, you know, everything in the background. There's like people working on it.
Yeah.
It's like you're right there.
Right, yeah.
And it's, you know, sparing no expense to have,
that's funny.
You know, people shoeing horses in the back and
yeah.
blacksmiths
oh,
and everything.
Cool.
I mean, it's like everything everywhere. It's really a strange like immersion idea of having a period type thing, just like Peaky Blinders
right.
is, you know, you can see when you watch Peaky Blinders, you probably don't notice it the way I do. Like everybody doesn't necessarily notice it, but there's like so many things going on in the background that are
yeah.
so irrelevant.
Yeah.
Except that it's just like, we wanted to look exactly like it would look if you were walking around this city. Right.
Right.
And this is the same way. And it's just, it's like gritty and ugly, and Tom Hardy's a crazy guy. And
so it's just a little slow.
Jonathan Pryce is really cool.
Or is it too packed?
It's just like a little bit slow.
The first episode.
In a certain sense of
right.
being slow, right?
Right?
It's just slow because they're trying to set up so much stuff and get you so, you know, they have so much information to try and deliver to you about who he is, who
right.
his father, who
right.
just died was, everyone's connection to everyone else is, Jonathan Pryce, like running the East India Company and everything. And just, there's so much to kind
yeah.
of, you know, it's like if they could just give you a program,
right.
So you could read it for a minute,
right.
Then we can move on. But
I love
so
that
it's
yeah.
a little bit like that.
Cool.
But you know, not in a really bad way. It's just that it takes until close to the end of the episode
yeah.
before we're like really doing something. You
yeah,
know?
And just because we're reviewing everything and we're not going to do this week. But that's one of the things I loved about Love and Friendship. In
yeah.
the first 3 minutes when they're introducing people, you just get a quick cliff note version underneath them, and it's just like, this is a benefactor. This
right,
is a
right.
born lawyer. You know, it helps.
Because
it helped
there's too
that,
much.
It helped move that thing
right.
so quickly into just being interested.
And because
so
it's
it was
based
fun.
Because it's based on something by Jane Austen,
right.
you know that it's going to have,
yeah.
you're going to need a program.
You are.
That's
yeah.
like what she does.
Right.
She's got like
right.
50 people. You have to try and keep track
it was
of
just,
them
it was
all.
Very
right.
cool. So.
Yeah. Anyway. So, okay. Live by Night.
Yeah.
If
I'm right with this with you.
Yeah, this is going to be a tough one, I think, because I kind of loved and hated this one,
yeah.
and it took me a while to kind of figure out exactly where I wanted to be. But at the end of the day, I couldn't give this any more than 5.
I'm a little off on you. Wow,
and,
that's too bad.
And I liked some of it, but a lot of it was boring and tedious and went on too long. And there's, you know, the whole thing with the KKK – I was like, just get on with this crap already. We
right.
know that you're just gonna kill this guy,
mm-hmm.
and it's not actually gonna be especially relevant or do anything anyway.
Right.
So just get past this, you know. But there was so much of it that, you know, it's like you think you're Shakespeare and you're not, or something. It was trying to be like this other level.
It's not quite pretentious, but it's. It's just not
but it's,
fulfilling.
But it's close.
Yeah.
It's getting there.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, even though there were a lot of scenes that I liked, there were a lot of, you know, various parts of it that I liked. I kind of liked his character, actually. And I didn't hate it. There was nothing that was being really awful at me where I'm like, I hate this. But God, I'll never watch it again.
Yeah.
Like, I never want to sit through it again,
yeah.
even if I kind of ultimately like the story and stuff. And I wouldn't be, I would go lower, except that I wouldn't be opposed to recommending it to people. So there's a lot of this movie that's pulling me
yeah.
in both directions. You know,
it's
so.
A strange one.
Yeah.
it was really weird for me because I'm on such a Ben Affleck kick lately, and by lately I mean when he directed Gone Baby Gone, mm-hmm. The Town, like all these things, I ate these things up left and right. I had to struggle.
The town, like, that's lately. Come on.
I know. Well, I prefer Argo, though I don't think about Argo so much. There's a few scenes in the town that I wind up thinking about every couple weeks. Like, just
right.
There's the scene with him and Jeremy Renner, which I think about sometimes when I'm at my own kitchen.
Especially
the whole thing, because I love it so much. But I actually think about Gone Baby Gone, if not every couple of days, maybe sometimes even every day. There are scenes in that I always love that. And that's partially because of Casey too,
right.
His performance.
Right.
But I love movies. I love all kinds of different films, but I specifically like a kind of film where nobody wins. And
right.
Gone Baby Gone is nobody wins. Like, there's no way to come out of that feeling good. The Batman stuff, I like him in it, but I hated the film. So, like, when I'm trying to preface, like, really liking Ben Affleck, it's not this Ben Affleck train that everyone's
right,
on because
right.
of this. But I had to struggle to give this 4.5. I was bored in all the wrong places. And
right.
there were times where it felt
like...
Well,
I wasn't sure if you were going to go higher.
No,
actually.
And
yeah.
I was so surprised because the trailer made me nervous. The trailer just looked film he should just stay away from, or he should have made... before he did Argo. Like, this looks like a film that's going backwards to me.
Right.
He seems too talented and too put together to make the film that has the problems that this film has. And it's a little perplexing, even though, like you, there are scenes in it that I really loved.
Right.
And I like him in it. It's not that I feel like he should have just directed it or only starred in it. But 3 days later, I couldn't remember hardly anything about it.
Exactly.
It's terribly
right.
forgettable.
Yeah.
And like what you just said at the end, I have no driving ambition to watch it again.
Right.
Whereas even with Argo, which is a film I've only seen once, I don't necessarily feel like I need to see again because I remember it very well. You know, I could watch Argo if I were on a flight, you know, and
right.
I mean, if you pin me down and put an entertainment in front of me, I can do it.
I might skip
I'll skip,
but...
I think I'll skip Live by Night and just read.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that's not, and I'm not trying to be facetious or funny or trying to take, you know, shots at it. I wanted it to be really good. There's this, I'm just looking on IMDb real quick. And I mean, I can show you, not that it matters. There's this scene that he has with Chris Cooper and he looks like he's not big enough to fill his clothes. Ben
right,
Affleck
right,
just
right.
looks like he's not old enough to do this movie yet.
He does.
And that's so condescending because the guy's in his mid-40s. I don't
right.
know how old he has to be. He just looks young. But outside of that scene, like the scenes when he's with the girl and they're cheating on everybody
they're,
and they're trying to be secret, those scenes are great. And he looks great in it and it works. When he's being a tough guy later, I don't have a problem, you know,
the,
him being
there is
it
a lot of it
doesn't work together.
That there is a lot of it that I feel like he doesn't really fit right. And
mm-hmm.
and I know what you're saying, and I don't know if there's
kind of weird.
There's something about, it's not necessarily even that he's not old enough, but like there's the scene where he goes in and he talks to the KKK guy
mm-hmm.
and then ends up shooting him
right.
or actually has his guy
right.
shoot him or whatever. And he says, like, well, what am I talking to you for then?
Right. I love that.
And I'm like, that scene rocks.
Mm-hmm.
That is an awesome
it.
Scene.
It's great.
I didn't love him in it.
Right.
I wanted somebody else
right.
to be him playing that character.
Yep.
Because that's just not exactly him. It's
mm-hmm.
not exactly the character that he's given us the whole time.
Right.
It's some other character who's slightly – it's like Walton Goggins.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Like,
absolutely.
If
put him
somebody
in,
else
oh man, it would have
given
great.
That line or whatever. And I'm like, this scene
mm-hmm.
is really cool. So I don't know if it's like maybe he should only be directing it. On the other hand, I feel like maybe he should only be in it because I feel like it's directing choices
yeah.
and how scenes are put together that make some of the problems.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're really good decisions, but there are a lot of things that I'm like, eh, I just don't like the way this happened
right.
exactly. And there's one even at the end when they're coming up through the tunnels
yeah.
and they're taking over and everything, right?
Yep.
And I'm watching that scene going, this should be blowing me away.
Yeah. Right.
This should be awesome.
Yep.
And that feels to me like a director
mm-hmm.
who's got something good to work with and just doesn't know how to get everything out of it
yeah.
that he should be. And
yeah.
part of that is what we're watching right then when it's happening.
Yeah.
And part of it is everything that you've built up
before
to lead to it.
Yep.
That it's just, I'm watching that scene going, oh, this should just rock. This should be like a 10 right here.
Yeah.
And it's, and it just can't manage it.
Just,
and it makes me like sad for the movie, right?
Yeah.
It's like, here's a script that somebody should have done something awesome with. And for whatever reason, Ben Affleck wanted it, and Ben Affleck gets what he wants, or,
sure,
you know, whatever.
Can,
right.
You know, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, if only somebody else would have got their hands on this. If we had a different director and a different star and put them together to with the same script,
right,
we would have probably easily had potentially like one of the best movies of the year. We'd have had a movie that was fighting alongside some of the top contenders of the year. And so then I'm watching it and then I'm just so disappointed.
Yeah.
It's almost like if it was worse, it'd have been better. Right. Because if I would have been so disappointed with it, I could have maybe given it like 6.5 or 7 or something like that.
I was just, you know, and it doesn't start off the same way. It actually starts off pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's working in all the right directions. And before we jump real quick, you know, at least it didn't patronize me by showing me scenes that every other gangster film has already done.
Right.
But it did them in ways that were new, like what you described when he meets the guy and he's like, well, what the hell am I talking to you for? Which is in the trailer. And then, you know, they get rid of him. You see those sometimes happen. The scenes with the guy that they can't regulate, the wacky, like
the KKK
guy, those were, I'll watch that all day.
Those
are great. Cause he's awesome.
So
in that,
those were great scenes, except for me, those were great scenes. If they like exist in a vacuum, if they're not actually a part of a story,
the narrative around it is
because what's happening in the movie.
Yeah.
I don't believe that guy lives for 5 minutes.
I know. Especially
with the
guy who we just saw was like, what am I talking to you for?
Right.
He doesn't negotiate with this guy.
We are so in like gangster world.
Yeah.
Right. But then at the same time, we're trying not to be for whatever reason with this guy. Cause the KKK has like a bunch of power.
Yeah.
And I'm like, when they go in that restaurant and they have that meeting and he's like, you know, thumbing his nose at him, basically going, you know, having a meeting with the mob.
Right.
Going, nope.
Right.
I'll take 60 and you take 40 or, you know, whatever.
Right.
He's like basically smarting off to him. I'm like, the next scene that I want to see is him tied up in a basement somewhere.
Right.
Spilling his guts about who all the other KKK people are so that we can find him and kill him. We find him and kill him later in a different way. But I'm like, it's just not.
They just don't go that way. Yeah.
It's just, especially if you want me to believe that Ben Affleck is the guy at the beginning of the movie.
That guy, right.
And the guy at the end of the movie.
Right.
And then in the middle of the movie, he's like another guy.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute. At some point, let's have one character.
Yeah. It was a little uneven and showed promise. But you're right, too. I almost feel like if someone was saying, hey, we're going to go see Live by Night, I wouldn't say, oh, man.
Stay away from it. No.
Like, yeah,
no,
let me know what you think.
Fun, yeah.
You know, I actually think go check it out. But, man, what a weird misfire.
This is one of those movies that I think especially highlights the problem with me trying to recommend movies to people, right? Because this is a movie where most people that I tell to go see it, or I say, go ahead and see it, are going to like it just fine. They're not going to watch the movie that I'm not watching in my mind and wishing I was watching and all that stuff going on, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're probably going to watch it and have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But, man, this is also a movie where I like this movie because it shows me that, like, critics still matter.
Yeah.
Because no critic jumped up and said, everyone.
And it was released at a certain time where it seems to have slid by.
Right.
I haven't heard people bashing it. I haven't heard people praising it. I think it's making a little bit of money, but it's not getting one or the other.
Right.
It's just kind of there.
And it seems weird.
I think people normally like to take a swing at Ben Affleck. And when they get a chance,
Man,
they go for the fence. And this is one where if you wanted to load up on him, because it's him, he wrote
a lot of
where he wrote Adapt It with Dennis Lehane. He directed it. He stars in it. Like, this is his thing. Swing away, make him the pinata.
Right.
Nobody's really doing it.
And
nobody's weird.
It's good enough that it's not
right.
That we can't go, oh, he's horrible.
He's
and
I told
you. Know, whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not quite bad enough for that.
Yeah. That's too bad.
Which would probably get more people to see it. Because at least someone would be talking about it
right.
in one way or another, right? And then people would at least see it. And it's weird, too, because you would think that maybe a mob movie as an option,
yeah,
no matter who was in it, you
right.
know, if anyone was talking about it at all,
yeah.
there'd be a certain number of people who'd go, ah, mob movie, let's go see that,
yeah.
right? But not so
the
much.
The cast is pretty good. You know, the cast is solid
oh, yeah.
all the way around. Ben Affleck, Chris Cooper, Sienna Miller, Ellie Fanning,
yep.
Brendan Gleeson. I liked him. He's not in it very
he's
long.
He's not in it
he's,
enough.
He's,
but
he's in it
yeah,
just enough to
good.
Make me want
yeah.
him in it more. And
right.
I thought the way he, because he's the character he plays, I thought he was definitely in it later.
Right.
Just even in a weird way later. No.
Yep.
2 days in and gone.
Nope.
See ya.
Yeah. Yeah, he's really weirdly good, though.
He is.
You know, you get the right dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hate Hollywood nepotism
right.
to a certain degree. But, like, in his case, it works.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It worked out. But
yeah.
anyway.
Right.
All right. So that's Live by Night. And now it's just figure out what to do next. I think we just are going to try and hit things as fast as we can. So Manchester by the Sea.
This will be easy because of how we feel about it.
Right. It's awesome.
Do you remember what you gave it?
I think I gave it 9.5. And you gave it 10. And
I gave it.
And
yeah.
you were like, what the hell's your problem,
right.
asshole, with your half a star that it doesn't get?
We both gave it 9.5, but I was,
oh,
I was arguing.
I thought you gave it
I was
ten.
Arguing hard to give it a
oh,
10.
That's right. That's right.
I couldn't
what happened
with the
what happened was we were talking about it long enough that I finally said,
you
how is it
down.
Not 10?
Right. Yeah. You dragged me down. I was like, all right. But officially,
yeah.
I wrote down 9.5 for both of us. So.
Yeah. So. And not only that, but it's the weirdest movie. It's a movie that hopefully you've seen it already.
I have.
If you have any interest in seeing it, you've probably seen it already. So
right.
it's too late now that we missed our
up.
Week.
Maybe small cities.
Yeah, it doesn't have
big
huge
yet.
Release probably. But this is one that when it hits video,
oh, God.
Like everyone's got to see it.
Yeah.
And this is one of those movies where you know, it's hard because we already talked about it forever.
It
Casey Affleck is really awesome.
Yeah.
But as he said when he was on Saturday Night Live, right, it's crushingly sad.
It's crushingly sad.
Crushingly
right.
depressing.
It
said.
Is.
Yeah. And it's funny because it's like he's trying to get people to not go. He was just sort of like,
yeah, it was weird.
Oh, it's
his
just
publicist
sad.
Must just be like, oh my God.
Yeah, what
I'm
are you
Casey,
doing?
You know?
And he's winning all the awards and deservedly so, and mostly
yeah.
because, without hopefully repeating stuff that no one heard anyway.
Nobody heard but me.
The,
and
the
I
showed
the
show didn't
thing.
Matter.
Yeah.
But it's one of those roles that you know, people don't write this role.
Yeah.
That's one of the things,
right?
Right? Nobody writes movies that have this character in it.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't go anywhere and he doesn't do anything.
Right.
And he doesn't like make a plot happen.
Right.
Right. There's no plot. He's like a guy who is almost like not there. Right.
Yeah. Right.
And he's depressed and he's just going through his existence day by day,
yeah.
trying not to think of anything.
Right.
That's his whole life. Is as long as I can just not think even for a second. So nobody writes those roles because it doesn't do anything except get you a stupid movie like this that
right.
doesn't get anywhere, has no plot basically. It
yeah.
basically has no plot.
Right.
It's like a couple of months out of his life.
Right.
But almost at random.
Sure.
It's not
could have been any time.
It's not because you know? Anything happens.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, nobody wants to play these roles. Even if somebody did it, no one wants to play the role because it's so hard.
Yeah.
Because if he's not, and I love the fact that he's winning awards for this role because usually you wouldn't.
Right.
A lot of years, there's been a lot of roles that are very similar to this. No one pays attention to it at all.
Yeah.
Because it's so hard to do. Even though it doesn't seem like anything, it reminds me a lot actually of Ian McKellen in Mr. Holmes.
Yeah.
Where it's so
like
so reserved
subtle.
And
yeah.
subtle
and brilliant.
And he has to do most of his acting just by kind of looking dumbfounded.
Right.
And it's just so hard. If you do it wrong at all,
right,
you're like silly.
You look bad.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
And your average moviegoer just doesn't appreciate how, because it doesn't look hard. It doesn't. He's not doing a lot of stuff, right? He's not, you know, doing my left foot or, whatever. Sure. He's not doing anything. Yeah, he doesn't have to deliver big speeches,
right,
or, you know, whatever. He just has to play a role where it could go wrong so fast,
yeah,
so many times. There are so many scenes in this movie that could be scenes from the world's dumbest movie. that it's mind-boggling that he could do it.
Yeah.
And you almost have to think, it's funny because I have to think that there are a lot of takes of virtually every scene in this movie.
Yeah.
But if you watch the movie with someone and tell them that, they go, why?
Right.
What's he doing? He's not doing anything.
Nice to see some acting finally.
What would he do different if he had another take, right?
Yeah.
He's just sitting there.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. But
he's strangely the most passive protagonist in a film I've seen in a long time, because like you said, he just has to let everything affect him. Everything unfolds. He's not progressing the action, and in fact he wants to just go to bed and stay there.
Right. And most of his lines are like, I don't know.
They're like, okay.
Right.
What do you want to do? Fine. Okay.
Right.
You know, do that. You know, I mean,
right,
it's almost like they filmed him not even doing it. But
right,
every once in a while, you'll see someone criticize a film like this where the acting looks so just obvious. Like, hey, man, just show up, look kind of sad, think about that time your dog died, and say, okay. You know, that's not easy to do, because sometimes you look like you just showed up then thinking of your dog.
Right.
Like, as big as the job he has, you know, the way he effortlessly juggles it, especially with the humor that he's very much a part of at times. It's not just he's the foil. Like, we talked about Lucas Hedges being like really, really dominant and strong and how he provided all the comic relief, but really anchored the film.
But he is weirdly good too. And he should get as much attention as he's been getting.
Did he win any of the best newcomer, young guys? Remember, he was up for those haven't passed.
He did. The Critics' Choice, he got.
I couldn't remember if he won that.
He got best, young actor or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, he steals every scene he's in. And when you see how great Casey Affleck is in all the scenes, and Casey's in almost every single scene, it's not an easy thing to do.
Right.
But.
And I'll tell you this too, since we're talking about awards, if you put, as much as I really like Nocturnal Animals and nobody pays any attention to it, that's another one that has somehow slipped under the radar, even though it's really awesome. And I liked Aaron Taylor-Johnson in it. He's fine in it. But if you're going to call these two things vying for the same award, and Lucas Hedges doesn't get it over Aaron Taylor-Johnson, I don't know how you came to that
conclusion.
We're
not watching movies the same way, you know, or you've got a weird category. But if you could see this film and you haven't, you should. If you like films that aren't like full of Jedis and killer sharks and special effects, go see this.
This is also in that very special niche of movies, for me anyway, and I'm not a big rewatcher of films necessarily, except for the ones that I watch 40 times, right? That's the option. This is still a movie that is in that very special class of movies where it's one of the best movies ever, but you never want to watch it again.
I don't think you have to. I think it works so well.
I can't imagine watching this again.
I would watch certain scenes.
Right.
I watched that car scene a million times.
It's like a man and a woman. You don't revisit that every year, right?
If you did, I'd want to know why.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, this thing does its job
This also reminds me, and we could throw in another movie of A Monster Calls.
Yeah.
Where the kid in that movie is also really good. Speaking of young actors, right?
Yeah.
But he is really good in a certain sense where it's kind of the same as Casey Affleck being good in this movie.
Right.
Because both of them, you watch this movie enough and watch how good they both are, even though the one is just a little kid.
Right.
But with what happens in this movie and how good they can do it, it makes you wonder about their lives.
Right.
Like especially in a Monster Calls, Casey Affleck's old enough that
he's
maybe something's happened to him in his life.
Yeah.
Right. Or at least he's got enough experience acting or whatever. But the kid in that Monster Calls, you're like, what has this kid come out of?
Yeah. Even if I allow you 11, where have you been? Like,
exactly.
What have you experienced to pretend this emotion?
Yeah. And he's got to do stuff with, you know, his mom dying of cancer and he's a little kid and he's got to deal with it. And he's staring at his grandmother knowing that he's going to have to go live with her because his mom's going to die.
Yeah.
And he's got to like have those emotions. And you're like, shit, where'd they get this kid from, like the children's hospital
And then on top of that, do it in front of a green screen. Pretend
and talk to a tree.
Right. So
yeah, that was really good. But Casey Affleck is still even the same, because even among, you know, scripts where you're playing some crazy tragedy.
Yeah.
The things that he has to do, that like that one scene, I know we talked about it when we did the show before, where he grabs the gun.
Yeah.
You're like, man, even if you know what you're doing,
right?
To really sell that,
and
have
the
audience like kind of jump. You're like,
yeah,
oh, holy shit,
jarring. It's so jarring.
It is.
Yeah.
It is wild. And then you're what has he? What kind of try to do that method. What do you do?
Right. Yeah, right. The only thing I remember thinking, I don't remember if we said it in the show, the only thing I remember thinking during that was, you know, and I believed everything that Casey's character was going through. It was really hard, because it's not terribly unbelievable to have that kind of thing. What keeps him going? You know, that was something that both was hinted in the periphery of the script, never really drawn out. It wasn't that the guy wasn't suicidal. I just, you know, it was strange to see someone who took so many hard hits and felt responsible for every single one of them to keep kind of living.
And you know, the thing that's cool about this script and him playing it, and as much as you get both the Afflecks and Matt Damon and everything's in Boston and we got a Paka Ka and the Yod and all that
you're
stuff.
You're getting better at that.
In all of their movies and everything.
Yeah.
His character is so Northeast.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Just the fact that, you know, people that like life just keeps kicking him in the balls.
Yep.
And he just keeps going,
All right. Spread my legs again tomorrow.
Right.
We'll take another hit. You're
like,
going to get tired before
what?
I will. Right. It's so great. It's so in so weirdly a way, so subtle, you know, and it's perfect the way it's set up, because you see these glimpses of who he was and then who he's become. And in that process, you actually get to overlay the scenes and see who he's going to be.
Right.
You know, and, you know, I think it's great. You know, it was, I think now I remember we both hemmed a little bit on the Michelle Williams scene that he has to have near the end as being something that kind of drew us back. And I remember thinking, I felt like that was the first day or two of shooting.
Yeah. And
because it doesn't feel
for me. Yeah, it was. I did mention that it's a very confusing scene, because I love the scene and yet I still don't like it.
Parts that didn't work.
Because it's just, I don't like that that's exactly how they played things out.
Yeah.
Even though I like that scene,
cut
the scene out and let me just watch that clip.
Right, yeah.
Without being in the movie, and I'd go, wow.
Somebody's like, you know, I don't want to see a Star Wars movie. I don't want to see a kid's movie. I'm not telling them to go see Live by Night. I'm asking them first, have you seen Manchester by the Sea? Then don't even talk to me. Go see it.
Right.
Be done. Thank you.
Or La La Land, right? Right.
La La La
right
Land.
Now.
Right. Those are the two push.
Those are the two for me.
And I know.
And we should be saying and Moonlight, except
good luck.
We haven't covered Moonlight yet,
right?
But it's limited, and it's even harder potentially to watch than this.
Yeah.
Because it's at many points, it's like very, like, whether you like Moonlight or don't end up loving it, it's like you like need a nap after you watch it. You're like spent, right? it's a lot of work.
Right.
And it's really good.
Right. It's not that it's bad, like it's exhausting.
But it is work to get through it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, we got too many movies still. So Rogue One, we're gonna cover real quick because
we're not
because it doesn't matter,
right?
Right.
Everybody's already
I can't remember exactly what I gave it, but I think I gave it like a 5 too. 5 or maybe 6.
6.5.
Yeah, yeah.
6.5.
Yeah, 6 feels about right.
Well,
I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
You must have liked it a lot more.
I might have.
You were at 6.5.
I might lose the half at this point.
Yeah.
Now that I've thought about it, I don't know.
It's
where I feel is like 6.
Yeah.
I mean, fine. 6
That's
and
how
half
feels.
Doesn't make that much difference,
yeah,
right?
It's the same thing.
But still kind of fun. I still was never bored. Even like think back now, another week, you know, I was never bored, but there were a lot of times I was rolling my eyes at the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And it never gets so like cartoony or video gamey that I feel like we're going back to the prequels, right? But it still is so goofy. So much of it is so goofy. Just the fact that, you know, we have to store information on a giant thing that we have to climb a tower to get,
yeah,
because otherwise, how are we going to fall off a tower?
Right. Right.
And I'm like, oh my God, even my 15-year-old kid is going, why do they build that weird offshoot of the tower to have the control thing on?
Right.
And I'm like, well, because otherwise how do you fall off that thing?
Right, yeah,
if we don't build this tower in a totally stupid way, then how will someone almost fall off it?
That scene stuck in my craw a lot too. I gave it a 7, and I think probably now I would feel like 6.5.
Right.
But
right.
It's again, you're a 6, 6.5. There's no difference. We're the same part. When we saw that film, and when we saw that part, when she's certainly trying to array the satellite dish to do all the stuff, and then she had to walk over, and not only did it look like a video game, and it was explained in a video game kind of way.
Right.
But right before that, when she climbs up the precipice, do you remember like the doors are shutting and closing very, very hard?
It's like Dragon's Lair.
What I remembered, I didn't even think about it after. When we saw that scene, I started grinning because one of my favorite scenes in Galaxy Quest is when he realizes they've built the ship to look like all the dangers that they've seen in television. And he's like,
right.
Why would, and Sigourney Weaver's like, why would we run through these doors that are razor sharp
right,
to get here?
Right.
And he's like, I think we did it in an episode.
Right.
It just looks so produced to be dangerous in a video game that you would, no one would ever build a door like that. Cause if I've got to go up and fix the array, I'm going to lose like 7 Imperial
workers, right?
Just because they can't time that right.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
It's just the silliness and ludicrousness of it all.
There's a lot of it. And I'll tell you this, in fairness to the movie, it at least lets you know where it's going right off the bat. Right. Because the very first thing that happens is a guy lands a spaceship like 1,000 yards away from a farm just so he can walk across this black field.
I love that. It was so stupid.
They land these ships later on in the movie. They land these ships like 5 feet from a guy.
Right.
Or like 2 feet from the wall.
Yeah. Yep.
Like they park these things like they're Segways, right? You can
right.
put that anywhere.
Yeah.
And then they go to this guy's farm and they're like, we got to walk like a half an hour. Just
if
to
I
get
was
to
in that
thing.
Ship, I would land and be like, have you got my march music ready?
I know,
blast
too.
It. Now I'm going to go.
And then right after right after that happens, the girl runs away into a cave where she can't possibly be anywhere else.
Right.
There's nowhere else for her to have gone.
Right.
And then the stormtroopers go in the cave and go, whoop, she's gone.
Right.
I guess she's lost to the universe forever. We'll just get back on our ship and leave. She's completely escaped this barren planet
where we can see everything. If we just walk 50 feet.
Right.
But whatever.
So she's here. So, but you know, that's what we need to happen. Right.
There's
so much of the writing of this movie that is so horribly, this is what I need to happen. It's, you know, it's like written completely backwards. We know where the movie ends. Right.
Right.
Because we've already made the movie that comes after it. So we just go backwards in all these steps and everyone has to die.
Right.
They have to get the plans. Well, if they just go in and get the plans and it had anything to do, you know, it's like we have spaceships and faster than light travel, but not zip drives.
No.
Right. No one's
anywhere.
Got like a flash drive.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, we have to climb up a big dumbass thing. Like, why? This is the Empire's whole planet dedicated to storing information.
Yeah.
And this is what they do. They have a giant tower with like hard drives that are bigger than any hard drive we've ever had to apparently store the information of like maybe a song.
Right.
Like one song fits on there.
It's in some ways it's a success because it's not as faulted with George Lucas's prequel mistakes, you know, and you give it plenty of stars for just not sucking.
Right. Exactly.
It didn't suck.
It gets like 4 stars just for not being awful.
Right.
Right.
And it's fine. You know, okay, good. Because Star Wars still means something to a lot of people. It had a lot of weird reshoots. It had a lot of problems with the final cut. It had some problems with the final cut. I feel like even though the scenes that you see mostly in the trailer are the ones that are in the movie, but not all, I didn't get the movie that the trailer showed me.
No, not really.
And I stopped looking at trailers after the second one, but it's faulted in all the weird places that I didn't think it was going to be. In some ways, even just I was bored by some of the action.
There's a lot of it too that is, you know, you could build this thing yourself if it was a horror movie because it's got all of the same exact things. You know, the cord you're trying to attach has to get wrapped around something, and
you don't have
stuck
the right
and you're
key.
Like, oh,
or, you drop your keys and you got to start the car. You know, in some ways, the Star Wars universe is populated by a formula that's worked in every single one. Yet in this film, there's an ingredient missing from that formula, and that's Jedi for the most part. There's no lightsabers. There's some Force kind of stuff. But I remember also one of the things that we had said in criticism of it, which was at the end of it, I didn't know anybody. I knew their names.
You didn't know anybody.
Remember, I was like that blind guy.
Right.
Blind guy has a name.
Blind guy.
I don't even know what's
big spelled. Gun guy.
The gun guy. Right.
And the only character who we still had trouble remembering his name, but the new droid.
Right.
That's Alan Tudyk.
Right. K something.
He was good.
He was good.
He was a lot of fun.
He was.
And he was well written. It was like somebody else was in charge of him.
Yeah.
It was like give him the droid, and then it worked out better than anything else, right? He was a lot of fun, and he gets you through a lot of the movie that's hard to get through, even because it's doing so formulaic of a plan that it's working through, and we throw him in a little bit, and you're at least kind of like, okay, that was funny, and you can kind of like keep moving along.
Right.
But the other thing that really pulled me away from this was, as much as I didn't love 7 because it was just Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back
again
mashed together and redone,
right,
which I thought was a just bonkers idea. I didn't get that at all.
Yeah.
But I was way more into the main character
in
that movie than I was in this.
Yeah. Movie. Yeah. And I mean, it's not cause I've seen it a million times, but Finn, Rey and Poe, I mean, I can remember all these
characters.
You're
just making up names.
No, Poe Dameron, Finn.
I know.
You know, okay.
I know, but they worked a lot harder on having characters. And in this one, it was almost like there was some weird thing where they decided, and it felt, watching this movie, like they thought they were forced to kill everyone at the end.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that they had to kill everyone
at
the end, just because in Star Wars, it says a lot of people died to get us these plans. Doesn't mean absolutely everyone died.
Right.
Now we spoiled the movie. So everyone dies. But anyway, so much of the movie going through it is, it almost feels like, you know, they die anyway.
Right.
So we don't have to do anything.
They didn't have to
there
be
was
responsible
something,
for good storytelling.
There was something going on behind the scenes in the minds, you know, behind the scenes of writing the script that was like, if anyone lived,
right,
it wouldn't make sense because we'd heard of them later, or they would have showed up in Star Wars or Empire, or at some point the blind dude would have made an appearance. And since he didn't, we have to kill him. Right.
Yeah.
And same is true of everyone that we see in the whole movie. And that would be okay if you wrote a story and then it kind of turned out, oh, look, they die.
Right.
But if you just start with they die, and then it's like the people writing the characters don't exactly care about them that much.
Right.
So they're not spending any time making me care about them,
right?
And so they just don't give us enough to work with, sure. I think. Too.
And in some ways, give them a lot of battles, give them the universe. And the universe was fun to inhabit again. I loved seeing the AT-AT walkers on the beach. I loved that whole, like, the aesthetic of it all.
I liked it too. I liked a lot of the fun stuff in the movie was really fun.
Right.
And it was lucky to have it be as fun as it was because it needed it. It needed it all to be fun. But I'll tell you what, this movie also suffered for me to a certain extent, the same way we have talked in the past about other sci-fi movies, other movies that happen in space, because in this movie, even more than any of the other Star Wars movies, although you might be able to make the case for it in other Star Wars movies, this movie suffered for me because at a certain point I was like, there's not that much metal.
Right.
They would have to have, with all of the ships, crap everywhere, and everything that happens, there's like, add 10 more ships. Like, somebody's walking around going, make 20 more Imperial whatever,
those
giant
things.
Ships that are a quarter of a planet anyway.
Yeah.
Whatever. All these ships everywhere, and at some point I'm watching the movie going, Jesus Christ, they've got like, at some point, the Star Wars movies have to start talking about the thousands of planets
that have been mined to nothing. Right.
I'm like, Jesus, even if you take a whole planet and get all the metal out of it,
that's one
of those ships.
And I see them everywhere. We're about 3 weeks out from having seen it, and I don't think of it much. I don't talk about it with my friends much. It's not because we're all older, though we certainly are.
There's nothing about it making me want to buy the toy or
three weeks after seeing the trailer, I was talking about it. I was like, wouldn't that be great? What if they do this? These things. It didn't quite deliver as strongly as I felt it wanted to. But it didn't need to. It needed to not suck.
Right.
And in some ways, like a Marvel film or a DC film, and DC films are on the ropes with these things because they're delivering things that kind of suck. It just had to be all right to be great.
Right.
And if it was great, it would have been amazing. Maybe they'll get there. But this one just didn't do it. And I agree with everything you said about the detriment of thinking that, well, we've never heard of any of these characters before. So we have to kill them.
So we have to get rid of them.
And I think that was a big loss because there was no investment in the narrative of them, even to the point where you realize, like, well, maybe this is Saving Private Skywalker. Maybe they're really going to this beach to die.
Right, right.
To do one thing. Yeah, but it's easy to figure out that they got out of there. And you know what? I stole something from the Empire. They're probably going to be looking for me. I know a tree in Dagobah I'm going to hide under for a few hundred years,
Yeah,
you don't have to kill everybody.
Yeah, we could have gotten rid of them, and you could take any one or two characters out of this movie and say they survived, and there's no real problem with it that they don't show up later. It's easy to spin that story that they're just that they're not Princess Leia.
Instead of we don't have to go through all the CGI stuff because we were hit or miss on a couple of them, but it was a nice touch to see all the characters that. Footage of from Star Wars show up in here, like squadron leaders.
Except that I didn't love the recreation of the guy. I feel like to that extent, just recast the role. I think it's you're on a weird slope now.
Yeah.
If we just make whole movies out of CGI
we're gonna see it.
Yeah, and that will be great. All right, now we're getting close to an hour.
Yeah, and we've done four.
Yeah. Do you want to keep going or should we just wrap it up? We got like 6 minutes and we'll be at an hour. We can maybe
what else
hit
left?
Passengers.
Oh, I feel like Passengers will be long.
Passengers could be long.
You want to do Assassin's Creed?
No. All right. We'll do Assassin's Creed. We'll save Passengers.
Because I feel like even good or bad, we'd talk about Passengers a little bit longer than 5 minutes.
Yeah. So, we'll probably talk about Assassin's Creed.
If you've got more than five on Assassin's Creed.
You know what? This is an odd.
I didn't see it yet. So.
You didn't?
No.
Oh,
we didn't go together, and I didn't see it yet. But so knock it out.
All right. Well, did you see Moana yet?
No,
because we could throw that out too, but no.
But
we'll just do a bunch of movies that only I've seen, and we'll chat about that.
I'm going to see Assassin's Creed, I think, this week, but it doesn't.
All right. Well, I'll do Assassin's Creed, and then we'll catch up with you at some later point with Assassin's Creed. And we've only got a few minutes anyway.
Yeah.
I am strangely in love with Assassin's Creed.
Interesting, because I talked to you the day you
even though that only means that it's like seven, right. maybe 7.5. I think officially, I have to give this 7.5.
Yeah.
Just based on the good time. Like, I think the movie in some way is like 6 or 6.5.
Yeah.
But I had so much fun with this goofy video game movie that I feel like it needs a little bonus there. And Michael Fassbender was really good, even though it's just weird for him to be in this. Marion Cotillard is in it too, and she's pretty good, although she doesn't get anything. It's actually too difficult to do.
Yeah.
But as we said before, I think this is like the contractual obligation thing to make Macbeth last year. They're both in that last year. Now they're both in this. And that is like a weird swing.
Right.
You go from making this really powerful, somewhat crazy version of Shakespeare, and then the next year you're in the video game movie.
Right. You had someone called a favor. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone did something. I don't think that Michael Fassbender's sitting at home playing Assassin's Creed nonstop all the time and goes, I need to be in it now.
Right.
Or,
who knows?
You know, whatever. I mean, maybe he does.
Was this in 3D? Did you see it?
I didn't see it in 3D, so I don't know if it is.
I don't think it's
in 3D. But anyway, it's so weird. The only semi problem with the movie for me, and this will not be a problem for anyone else probably, except the problem is that they have this like goofy machine what he gets in. And I think it's overdone, and it feels like something where there's some producer who doesn't know anything. Who goes, no, we have to give people something to look at.
Right.
Do something showy, right?
Right.
In the games, not that you have to, be completely beholden to the video games that you're making it out of in like every single aspect or anything, but in the games you basically just stick like a little thing on your head and then boom, you're like
there.
In the thing.
Right.
Because it's, it's doing whatever. It's like reading your mind and, whatever gobbledygook science it's doing or whatever.
Yeah.
To suck you back into the life from out of your DNA and all this, whatever. The story is about how your DNA remembers everything that happened to your ancestors and everything. So if you just access your DNA the right way, you can basically like relive their lives. You can know what they did and... whatever. It's basically like
the collective.
It's just just their memories are stored in their DNA that they pass on to you.
Right.
That's the story.
Yeah.
But anyway, they have this giant machine. You see it in the trailers.
Yeah.
It basically grabs you like this weird crane arm by the back, and then all of a sudden you see him in the trailer. He's like jumping around on the thing and everything.
Yeah.
And it's just goofy, and it doesn't do anything anyway.
Right.
It doesn't. It doesn't actually serve a function except that there's somebody involved in the production of this movie.
Right.
That said, no, we have to give audiences something to look at or else they won't know what's going on.
Right.
Like if he just sticks a thing on and then suddenly he's in the past, everyone will go, what's happening?
Yeah,
I don't understand
this
movie. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, that was goofy, but it also has some problems where it's trying to, it's almost like it needs a little bit more and a little bit less establishment of the story.
Yeah.
Because you've got the assassins and you've got the Knights Templar basically are like the other side, and one side is trying to get this magic apple that aliens left for us. This is like the whole story.
Right.
It's like the whole story of all the games, right? It's the assassins versus the Templars throughout history, and it always has been, and that's the story of all the games. And they're basically all trying to find these artifacts that were left by aliens eons ago that give you all this power. And the one artifact that we see in the movie is like the Apple of Eden or whatever.
Yeah.
And basically it would like give you the power to take free will away from people. And the Knights Templar sell that as, you know, controlling people to get rid of all the violence and everything.
Right.
And the assassins try to kill them and whatever.
Yeah.
And anyway, in the, you know, in the games, you get all of this history at all these different times. And it's a good excuse to set a game in a bunch of different places in time,
yeah,
and bunch of different historical,
right,
events and stuff like that. And anyway, Michael Fassbender, his character turns out to be someone whose ancestor at one point knew where the apple was.
Right.
So we need his memories so that we can, you know, figure out what his ancestor knew about where the apple is so that we can go get it. And, and hilarity ensues. And he's basically captured by the Templars and forced to go live these memories.
Yeah.
And then the assassins like try to rescue him. And so it's very different from the games or a story of a game, because it doesn't really give you much of the assassins, right? It's
right.
just the Knights Templar who have him and are controlling him.
Yeah.
And we only kind of get the assassins like sort of from the past, and they were there then. And,
right.
But it's a lot of fun. All of the stuff, when we go back into the past, it's weird because like when you play the game only really exists in the past.
Right.
There's like the cut scenes and the
you know,
goofy parts of the present when you're going back or whatever. But all of the game playing is in the past, and that's all of the cool stuff in the movie.
Anyway.
All the best stuff. But there's a little bit of stuff where he's with marrying Cotillard in the present and everything. And it's one of those movies, though, you know, if you think too much about it, it's a little goofy. But if you just are going to have a good time,
right,
it's a lot of fun. The action is actually really cool.
Yeah.
And it's not overdone and overblown.
Right.
And even though they go back in the past and do like some kind of crazy assassin parkour on the roofs of buildings and stuff like that. But still, it's kind of, you can sort of believe it. It's like if you had people who trained to do this, they could do it, right? Not like they're magical or they're...
I didn't realize it was a two-hour film. 155, so
yeah,
that's pretty cool.
It is a little too long, for sure.
It
could be like 20 minutes shorter,
yeah,
and it wouldn't lose anything. And then the movie does kind of end with, I'm not sure how to end.
Oh, yeah.
And then so
like it's... setting up a sequel.
So it's not... not exactly
not really.
Like a sequel, just... like we're not really sure
how to
end. So all of a sudden it's weird because it kind of negates all the games because,
oh really?
Because at the end of the movie, it's like over.
It's like we've
solved the problem.
It,
right.
Yep.
So that's a little weird.
Yeah.
Because you can't really fit it in.
And you like
the universe,
right? Like I remember you.
Yeah, sure.
You'd had fun with the
cool games.
Before.
Yeah.
Just for anybody who's a fan of the games. And
anyway, especially since you can't talk about it anyway. So I give it like a 6.5, 7, somewhere in there. But if you just want to go have some fun with an adventure movie, it maybe talks a little too much, especially if you're not invested in the game series anyway.
Right.
But other than that, it's a fun, fairly clever movie where there's some really cool action.
That's a weird one. Every once in a while we'll bring stuff up, but that's a weird one where I would have thought there'd be something at the end of it, but just checking Run P, nothing.
No, there's no
There's
point.
Nothing. There's been nothing at the end of most of the films we've seen.
No,
lately.
Because it's over.
But
what could you have at the end?
The start of again.
No, there's no start of again. All right. Well,
cool.
we better get out of here. And next week
we did good.
This week we covered
good.
A lot of stuff.
We
next week, we're going to have to try and get through a whole bunch of things again.
Yeah.
Hidden Figures,
yep.
Fences,
yep.
God knows what else. We'll get to Passengers, and we'll probably have a couple of other things to catch up on, too.
Whatever else is open.
And then I think probably the week after that, we're going to have to get into like best of the year, then worst of the year, then our awards, because otherwise it'll be
February
March
again.
By
yeah,
the
right.
time we
yeah.
get to
it's
it.
It's almost
right.
February, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So that's that's going to do it for us this week. So much for tuning in. And please share, subscribe, rate us on iTunes, and otherwise trick your friends into listening to us. Thanks.
Bye.